Good afternoon, it's Dr. Gangueras, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 14 April 2024, and this is a Sunday afternoon. We are continuing our lectures, of course, on immune cell biochemistry, and specifically T lymphocyte membrane biochemistry. So, recap of last time, we were talking about Filippin and nystatin. In fact, they're polyene antibiotics. They're not peptide antibiotics. They're polyene antibiotics. And they specifically associate with cholesterol. And in so doing, they disperse lipid membrane rafts. And remember, that was involved in inhibition of T cell receptor activation. And that included that whole calcium response and the tyrosine phosphorylation of the CD3 zeta and phospholipase C gamma 1. Okay. So Filippin is indeed a macrolide antifungal that comes from the mycelium of a Streptomyces, just so you understand that antifungals can come directly from other fungi. So this is, it happens to be from the actinomycete. And it's got an unusual structure. It's a 3R, 4S, 6S, 8S, 10R, 12R, 14R, 16S, 17E, 19E, 21E, 23E, 25E, 27S, 28R, octahydroxy 31R, 1-hydroxyhexyl, 17-28-dimethyl-1, oxacyclo-octa, COSA 17, 19, 21, 23, 25, pentaene 2-one. I'm not going to tell you what nystatin is, but it has a similar series of chiral centers. So it's very specific. And I told you that nystatin specifically seemed to block the internalization of glycerophosphatidylinositol anchored surface protein CD59, and that disrupted lipid rafts. Also recall that an anti-CD3 monoclonal antibody called OKT3 has been used for a long time to treat acute rejection in solid organ transplantation. But that paradoxically, this monoclonal antibody can also induce PTLD, which is a post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorder. So it's another example where a drug that is used as immunosuppression can actually induce immunoproliferation, because OKT3 involves suppressing activation of the T cell receptor response, but it actually promotes T cell proliferation. So it inhibits activation, but promotes proliferation. Okay? Very common problem with many drugs, even though they sound very specific. And indeed, they are specific for activation, but they have the opposite effect on proliferation. So, all right. Now, we were talking about sphingolipids in this whole process. And I can tell you, too, that serine polymethyltransferase is going to rate-limiting enzymes in de novo sphingosine biosynthesis is inhibited by yet another fungal toxin, and that's called myriosin. And an endoplasmic reticulum localized ceramide synthases in general are inhibited by another fungal toxin. This is called fumonisin B1. So there are many toxins out there which corrupt T cell receptor activation by working against some of these surface proteins like the CD3 zeta epsilon subunit, which is what that monoclonal antibody inhibits. And some of those other fungal inhibitors we just talked about, Filippin and nystatin, inhibiting lipid raft transport. Now we're telling you that yet another class of fungal toxins, myriosins and fumonosins, specifically seem to inhibit serine palmitoyl transfers. It's all linked up to sphingal lipid metabolism in the T lymphocyte. So in the de novo pathway, ceramides, once they're generated in the ER, are transported to the Golgi, and then ultimately they're converted to the glycosphingolipids and sphingomyelin, which remember that has phosphorylcholine as its polar head group. And so you have ceramide synthesis and you have ceramide transport protein to consider for ultimately generating the membrane in the T lymphocyte that will correctly coordinate the T cell receptor response once presented with antigen by a dendritic cell, for example. And ceramide, recall, is a major determinant for lipid raft biology, with cholesterol playing a stabilizing role. And also keep in mind that lipidated and glipiated proteins serve as their own microdomains within the membrane. So those are those leashes on those polypeptides, right? Specific glycerolipidation and then the glipiation, which are the GPIs. Those are the phosphoelastal, covalently bound proteins. So lipid rafts are spatiotemporal suborganello structures of organized and spontaneous, what I call teleobiological agency. So they are agents of teleobiology, meaning very directed dialogue with each and every other membranous component in sequence. And there's also endosomal, exosomal pathways, making lipid rafts playing the architectonic for cellular functionality, both locally and systemically. Locally and systemically, endomembranously and plasma membrane. All regulating, because this is the lecture circuit we're in now, T cell functional biology. Okay. So we need to know more about sphingal lipid biosynthesis, obviously. Now, palmitoyl CoA will react with L-serine in the presence of pyridoxal phosphate and manganese divalent cation to generate 3-keto dihydrosphingosine, which must then be reduced to sphingosine. So the 3-keto dihydroxysphingosine is reduced to sphinganine, which is also known as dihydrosphingosine. Ceramide synthesis is controlled by serine palmitoyl transferase. That's the SPT enzyme I just mentioned to you. And that product, remember, we have to reduce. Okay. So that reaction, converting then dihydrosphingosine to ceramide, is catalyzed by ceramide synthase. And ceramide synthase then is going to be involved in dihydroceramide production. And dihydroceramide then has to be converted by the dihydroceramide desaturase, that enzyme acronym is DEGS, D-E-G-S, to ceramide. And ceramide is the precursor in central nervous system to axonal localized and oligodendrocyte generated sphingomyelin by the sphingomyelin synthase. And there are a number of enzymes then which will react with sphingomyelin. And these can be inducible or constitutive, and these are the sphingomyelinases. And they will resynthesize ceramide. So once sphingomyelin is made, it can be converted back to ceramide. And again, let me give you the de novo pathway one more time. serine plus palmitoyl CoA via the serine palmitoyl transferase will make 3 ketosphingonine. Then converted to dihydrosphingonine, dihydroceramide, and that reaction is reversible. That's the hydroceramide synthase. And thence to ceramide via dihydroceramide desaturase. And that fumosidin B1 inhibits dihydroceramide synthase. And the myriacin inhibits serine palmitoyl transferase. Once ceramide is generated, of course, it can be used to synthesize sphingomyelin via sphingomyelin synthase. Right? The ceramide itself can be converted via ceraminidase to sphingosine, or sphingosine can be converted via ceramide synthase in a salvage pathway to ceramide. And that is also inhibited by fumonisin B1. These are all these fungal toxins. Of course, you know, sphingosine can be converted to sphingosine 1-phosphate via sphingosine kinase. And sphingosine 1-phosphate can go through the sphingosine 1-phosphate lyase reaction to generate ethanolamine 1-phosphate and palmitoylaldehyde. Okay? So that's just one portion of the sphingolipid pathway that I just went through. All of this is going to be functioning in the T cell, regulating ultimately the levels of specific sphingolipids, which are going to be regulating the T cell receptor. Okay, this is all membrane biochemistry in T lymphocytes, among other cells, I might add, right? Now, the plasma membrane is a structural event domain for sphingosine kinases. And that sphingosine kinase activation is necessary to then carry out many signal transduction cascades. So once sphingosine 1-phosphate is generated from sphingosine, which is, of course, a product of ceraminidase, sphingosine to sphingosine 1-phosphate. Sphingosine 1-phosphate can then activate multiple receptors. Sphingosine 1-phosphate receptors 2 and 3 will go through a GQ protein. That GQ protein will then control phospholipase C and calcium mobilization, which will then go downstream to regulate protein kinase C and cNOS, nitric oxide synthase. Sphingosine 1-phosphate receptor 1 through 5 will regulate a GI protein, which will control phosphoinositol kinase and AKT. Those two kinases will regulate cNOS activity and will block FOXO activity, the glycogen synthase kinase 3 beta, and the Bax-BAD system. Phosphoinositol 3 kinase regulated by GI, regulated by sphingosine 1-phosphate receptors 1 through 5, will also regulate NF-kappa-B. And NF-kappa-B can induce nitric oxide synthase of the iNOS family. Okay. So sphingosine 1-phosphate and also ceramide 1-phosphate working through its receptor can bind multiple cell surface protein receptors. And I just mentioned to you, these sphingosine 1-phosphate receptors are functioning then through phosphoinositol 3 kinase and AKT and ERK. Okay? Now, these receptors, sphingosine 1-phosphate receptors, belong to the EDG family of receptors. And they bind to GQ, GI, and G12-13 and Rho proteins. Okay. Sphingolipids also modulate signaling events such as cyclic AMP and MAP kinase. MAP kinase, of course, is the mitogen activated protein kinase. Protein kinase C, phospholipase D, and the phosphoinositol-1,3 kinase, AKT-PKB pathway. Now, it is the phosphoinositol-3 kinase, AKT pathway, that co-distributes metabolic and stress signals, engaged also in energy metabolism that is linked to aging and age-related diseases in the immune response, in the immune system in general, through the T cell receptor responses, and also through age-related diseases in the central nervous system, which involve leukocyte activation. And there we're talking about resident microglia. And some of that regulation, which becomes corrupted with aging, then can induce multiple forms of neurodegenerative diseases, including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Okay. Sphingosine 1-phosphate then works through these G protein-coupled receptors, and it will regulate oxidative and nitrosative stress and death survival modes. As sphingosine 1-phosphate receptor 2, I mentioned, specifically inhibits AKT, while sphingosine 1-phosphate receptor 3, binding sphingosine 1-phosphate, right, activates AKT. iNOS is typically induced by NF-kappa B, but it will also undergo sphingosine 1-phosphate, ceramide phosphate, dependent suppression via a specific P38 MAP kinase. Ceramide also participates in the control of senescence, differentiation, and neural arborization, while free sphingosine, which can be built up within that pathway I went through 5 minutes ago, may modulate cell death, and ceramide 1-phosphate stimulates cellular survival. And it may counteract ceramide signaling by decreasing acid sphingomyelinase and serine palmitoyl transferase activities. Sphingosine 1-phosphate also regulates cell viability, neuronal excitability, and, as I think I mentioned, arborization. Because we're talking about them in this cycle of lecture, sphingolipids are engaged in all these immune phenomena, critically altering the fate of multiple cell lines interacting with leukocytes and lymphocytes. Therefore, microglia-linked neurodegeneration. Okay. So there's a lot more complexity here in terms of antagonism with what's known as a sphingolipid rheostat. So given the active intestinal inflammatory responses, in part by the trafficking of leukocytes from circulation into the gut tissue, compounds that block leukocyte trafficking, such as vedolizumab, etrolizumab, and otemelab, or egress from primary or secondary lymphoid organs, such as the sphingosine 1-phosphate modulators, can reduce or control inflammation in patients with IBD. Okay? So there's the rheostat between ceramide and sphingosine 1-phosphate. Depending on how that rheostat is set, Alzheimer's disease, for example, is correlated with high ceramide, low sphingosine 1-phosphate. Parkinson's, high ceramide, sphingosine 1-phosphate neutral. And aging is linked with ceramide increase and specifically sphingosine 1-phosphate decline. Okay? And remember those three different antibodies now that all block leukocyte trafficking because they're used in the clinic. So ontamolimab and etrolizumab and verdolizumab all block leukocyte trafficking. And those are all gut-associated monoclonal antibodies to control inflammation for IBD. Okay, I just repeated that to give you those monoclonal antibody names more carefully. So gut leukocyte recruitment consists of three steps: tethering, rolling, and transmigration of the leukocytes, all into the tissue. So E-selectin and P-selectin on the endothelium and L-selectin on leukocytes mediate tethering and rolling. The selectins form a low affinity bond with sialyl, Lewis X modified glycoproteins, creating the rolling effect. And that process allows for blood-associated leukocytes to tether to microvasculature, where they are activated by chemokines, particularly chemokine CCL25 and its receptor CCR9, activate the alpha-1 beta-1 and alpha-4 beta-7 integrins. And they bind to vascular adhesion molecule as VCAM1 and the mucosal adhesin cell adhesion molecule 1, that's MADCAM1, respectively. Lymphocytes egress from lymph nodes mediated by the sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor, such that the concentration of sphingosine-1 phosphate is relatively low in lymphoid organs compared with the lymph itself, forming a sphingosine-1 phosphate gradient between the lymphoid organ and the lymphatic system. So sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor is expressed on T cells, of course. It's activated through encounters with antigen-expressing dendritic cells. Sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor expression is decreased after activation of T cells, all this happening in the lymph organ. So the process includes upregulation of CD69, downregulation of the Krupp-like factor 2, both of which are transcription factors, Krupp-like factor 2 in particular, and that leads to sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor 1 degradation. Newly generated effector T cells lose expression of the chemokine receptor 7, and they then are induced to re-express sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor 1, and then egress from the lymph node to the lymph and periphery. Okay? So you see this regulation is tightly coupled to sphingolipid metabolism. All of this linking either leukocytes and lymphocytes, but we're primarily interested in the lymphocyte mode of regulation. That's because these are the lectures we're dealing with right now. All right, so sphingosine-1 phosphate and ceramide antagonistically signal cell survival or death via shared mediators, and both directly inhibit each other's synthesis. Remember the pathway for sphingosine phosphate and ceramide production I mentioned now about 15 minutes ago. So sphingosine-1 phosphate is viewed as an anti-apoptotic agent, and it mediates the actions of numerous anti-apoptotic molecular events. Sphingosine-1 phosphate typically opposes the pro-apoptotic role of ceramide by decreasing oxidative stress and modulating expression of pro- and anti-apoptotic proteins of the BCL2 superfamily. So the ceramide phosphotransferase, ceramide synthase, and the DEGS enzyme all regulate the production of ceramide, as does sphingomyelinase and ceramide 1-phosphate phosphatase. Right? All right. Once ceramide builds up, ceramide will activate PP2-alpha, which will activate AKT, which will block BAX-BAD and that glycogen synthase kinase 3-beta. At the same time, ceramide, working through reactive oxygen species increase, will turn on the J and K, the P38, and the ERK kinases. They will promote P53 and AP1. All of that will serve to control multiple enzymatic and signal transduction cascades. One of them is the mitochondrial respiratory chain as well, which will then, of course, control bioenergetics. So with P53 and AP1, and with blocking BAX-BAD GSK3-beta, one of the early processes will be the mitochondrial respiratory chain inhibition, which will lead to increases in reactive oxygen, increases in cytochrome C, and then ultimately caspases 2, 3, 5, 8, and 9, as well as LC3-2. Now, that system working through LC3-2, which is the lipidated microtubule-associated protein 1 light chain 3 beta, will involve a process leading to axonal degeneration and neuronal death. So the high reactive oxygen species generation will go working through P53, turning on the sphingosine kinases, generating sphingosine 1-phosphate, working through its receptors, remember that pathway, can trigger phosphatidylinositol 3 kinase and AKT. That will then block BAD and GSK3-beta, block FOXO, and inhibit neuronal death. So see, while ceramide is promoting neuronal death and axonal degeneration, sphingosine 1-phosphate is blocking all that, right? And one of the ways it's blocking is directly through AP1. Sphingosine 1-phosphate also blocks the HDACs. Those are the histone deacetylases 1 and 2, which when those are blocked, that will then affect NF-kappa-B activity. NF-kappa-B modulation will also inhibit neuronal death. Okay? So now you understand how this is working with the immune response in the central nervous system. And it's working, again, not paradoxically and not antithetically. And it's not antinomious. So it's not an antinomy that the ceramide pathway can be triggered. Antinomy means that you have a violation of the central law of logic, that you have A and not A. It's not what's occurring. You're having A and not A, but they are regulated through two different downstream pathways. One is the ceramide pathway and one is the sphingosine 1-phosphate pathway. So it doesn't violate the laws of logic, you see, as well as any other control over the downstream phosphorylation cascades. I always like to bring back the logic because sometimes when people are hearing this or putting together these slipstream pathways, it sounds like sphingolipid metabolism is both inhibiting and promoting inflammatory response. Well, it is doing both through different circuits, therefore through different receptors. So it is not functioning to contradict itself. It's functioning to control one pathway or the other. Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, 14 April 2024. Wishing you a good evening and bye for now.